I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. The air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Welcome to Toward Anarchy. Thank you so much for joining me. I am Michael Storm, and as always, it's great to be with you every time we do this and have a wonderful one planned out for you, as I always do. And we'll have a great conversation with Dr. Lloyd, picking up where we left off the last time we were together, which seems like a very, very, very long time ago because, you know, life, it happens. Before we dive into that, do me a favor, click that like button, share this thing around. It's the biggest thing that you can do to help the show and help it grow and get it into the hands of other, into the ears and brains and minds of other people, ultimately, not just in their hands. Although, having been an activist and having been down on the street and having handed out physical media over the years, it's amazing how many times you'll hand somebody that physical media, and then it'll be months later. They'll just all of a sudden show up and they say, hey, you know, I had that DVD and it was just sitting around. It was sitting on the countertop, it was sitting on the table there when I walk in the house, and I eventually threw it in the player and wow, blew my mind. Whatever it was, it could have been something from Alex Jones or any number of documentaries over the years about the state and various conspiracy theories and things on the Fed, whatever it is. So you never know. If you do just hand it to them, maybe they will listen to it eventually. TowardAnarchy.com to follow along. Every episode is up there. And it's at Toward Anarchy on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, wherever it is, it's at Toward Anarchy. And click that like button. All right, Dr. Lloyd, you know him. He's a facilitator and healer. EvolvingTheSpecies.com is his website where he is, well, he's trying to help evolve the species. We've been talking about it for years and many, many, many hours of conversation and helping people and talking to people now that we do the live show every Wednesday on Republic Broadcasting Network, which reminds me, do me a favor, support the network, republicbroadcasting.org. Over on the left-hand side, any page on the website, click that donate button. Listeners have made Republic Broadcasting Network what it is all these years, years and years and years and years and years later, still contributing to hear the conversation, to have that space, to have the conversation, republicbroadcasting.org. Dr. Lloyd, always great to talk with you. You look okay. I haven't seen you recently. I've talked to you quite a bit. And the reason we haven't filmed one of these things, had one of these conversations in a while, is because you tweaked your back a little bit and we're down for the count for a little while. So good to see you mobile. Doesn't look like you're, you don't seem to be wincing or favoring anything. But then again, it's a little box I'm looking at you. How you doing, my friend?
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, we spoke about the injury I had, and I had done a little bit more than I should have, and I fell, and I was lifting a box above my head, and I fell, and I ended up creating a strain sprain in my low back, and I've been hobbling around for the last 3 weeks. A little better every day, though. You know, I'm doing everything right. Nights are pretty tough because you wake up from the pain, but I'm doing everything properly. I'm hydrating. I'm doing acoustic magnetic therapy, infrared therapy. I'm doing acupuncture on myself. You know, I'm doing everything right. Topical analgesics. So when you're doing everything right, you can't be wrong. Okay. So I'm taking care of myself in that way. And my mind has been quite clear, even though my body has been through a lot of pain. I've been able to navigate through this in a very unique way. You learn more about the healing experience when you go through a trauma like this. And I've been through broken leg. Obviously, those that know about my story, I was an epileptic and I had seizures in my my early years. But in any case, I overcame them. And when you do, you're a little bit stronger. And when you do that, you can speak to it. And being in the healing arts and knowing how the pain, it gives you this depth of compassion for patients. And that's one of the things that I had made a kind of additional realization to people that are going through such suffering. It reminded me of just how much, you know, we have to go through to make it to the other end, which is to say that when, you know, oh, I hurt my elbow, you know, it's really a pain in a tennis elbow, and you get a little acupuncture, maybe a little analgesic, and feels better. It's, oh, it's better. Okay, that's nice. But what if something disables you, you know, takes you down? And falls are very common, especially with the elderly. And I fell. I mean, there was no question that it was, you know, that kind of injury where I realized that I was hurt. And so I had to take action. I did go to the ER, and I got in fact, we spoke on a couple of weeks ago, what happened in the ER, my ER experience, you know. I did make adjustments, and I'm satisfied with my approach on that. So when the we have that song, don't we, Michael, in the beginning, it's who is gonna help the medicine man, right? Thank you for the concern and good energy for those people sending me that they're concerned and that they send you know, prayers and good energy. So thank you, everybody, for doing that who has. And today we're going to launch off into that discussion that is part two of what is a five-part series of heart mastering, or what I would consider the heart of the matter, really, and confronting fear and forgiveness, for confronting fear and forgiveness. And I made some additions that I wanted to bring up to ask you directly on how you approach fear. What is it that you are dealing with in your life that you're afraid of, if you are being honest? What is it that really, if you're not afraid, then what is it that is bothering you, or what is it that is causing you to shut down? Now, I'm here to give you the tools to get rid of fear. That's what I'm here for. If I can give you the tools, I have to explain how it works, under what situation, what conditions are involved. And I set up some questions this morning on what I feel is important to address this topic. So starting out with the first question to you, Michael, is what is behind the fear of inadequacy? Could you give me some kind of picture? What would be behind the fear of being inadequate?
Yeah, I suppose just a lack of knowledge going into something, obviously, or, you know, past failure.
Past failure, very good. That's excellent. So when you ask yourself that question, where are you feeling inadequate? Now, fear is not understanding. And when you don't understand, and to believe in what you don't understand is the embodiment of being afraid. The mystery with fear is when you embody the mystery of fear, you're being afraid. Afraid is when you've adopted, you've taken on fear as being part of you. Okay. That's afraid. If you're afraid of getting cancer or afraid of getting in a car accident, or you're afraid of breaking up with your spouse, those things are what you're drawn to. In other words, the fear is an energy when you don't understand. And when you draw those things to you, of the fear, that means that you increase those events to happen. Okay. You increase your probability of having those negative events happen in your life. So when you say that, you know, past experience of failing, or you come to a place of where you don't have an understanding of how something works, when you were first riding a bike, you probably felt like, oh, how does this work? How am I going to balance? How am I going to, you know, manage the handlebars? And how am I going to be able to keep myself moving so I don't fall? The first initial movements, you're given a push, you know, to get yourself going, but you don't know how to operate your muscles, right? There's that fear of, how am I going to operate this, you know, this vehicle, this bicycle? But once you get control of it and you realize that you're moving in a way where you're moving forward and you're not falling, you might fall, probably will if you do it for the first time, but you overcome it because you know how to operate the pedals and hold the handlebars and how to balance, right? Fear is the same in all situations, right? If you understand it, you have control of it. When you overcome the fear of how to ride a bicycle, you have no problem. Every time you get on the bicycle, you're off and you're going wherever you're going because you know what to do. Now, if you're looking at the program that we're brought up with, we're brought up with fear. Fear-based medicine, fear of your world around you. Fear is the primary tool, that and anger, of control. So I'll ask another question that goes into this, because we actually talked about that this week about where greed comes in. And greed is material accumulation's attempt to overcompensate for fear of need. And I'll ask you directly, are you, Michael, greedy?
No.
Not at all. Far from it.
Far from it. And I didn't expect that you would answer yes to being greedy because you don't feel inadequate, that you don't have to overcompensate. But when we were talking about the politicians, why would they be so greedy? Why would they be so driven by greed? Why would people that are in positions of power be so greedy? You know,
I think it's fairly obvious. It's because they're cowards. They're afraid that they're going to lose the phony little situation that they've managed to get set up for themselves. So it's a very fragile foundation on which their power, their wealth is built on. And so it can slip out from under them anytime. That's the reality of all government and the whole very basic notion of the redistribution of wealth from the people to the people who are running things, particularly when the people who are running things mismanage things and do things wrong. Except that in our sort of modern times, what we see is that they really don't end up paying for it. And so there's also, they're not really as worried about losing it as they are about losing it all, like everything. All of it taken away from them, get locked in a cage, have to, you know, make up for mistakes that they made. It's just fear. It's fear. Fear of losing what they built because they didn't build something real. They didn't build something substantial. There's no solid foundation. It's the fact of government across the board.
Yeah, they're rewarded by fear. They're rewarded by what they, like you just said, that's been set up artificially. It's not real. It's not sustainable.
Well, and their job is serving up fear as well. So they go around, that's how they get their votes. That's how they keep their position, is they keep the people who vote for them more afraid of the other guy, of the other situation without government or without that so-called safety net or whatever program it is that they have their mitts involved in, that they stand to lose. And so they deal in fear as well. It's an evil, evil, nasty circle.
Yeah, it's their currency, if you will. It's their way of giving the message that draws people into them. They're drawing them in because they know the public is afraid. And when they're afraid, they're easily, malleable, and they can be directed in places where they're basically building on ignorance. They don't have the tools. That's not going to be tolerated. Not in my world. And that's why we have to do this. We have to change the direction that we're going, or it'll be perpetuating more and more fear and more and more destruction, more and more inadequacy. It's all built on a foundation of ignorance. And that's why we have to sort this out, because nothing's going to change until we do. Okay. That's why we're ready for an upgrade, to speak of, in psychologically, because the medical profession has been primarily driven by fear. It's primarily built on fear, and the politics no different. Any of our agencies that are in government are using fear as their main weapon, if you will, and to get a rise out of people, right? Get them to be angry. Angry, by the way, is another one I'm going to be talking about in the third part. And that is, anger is when you don't know how you feel. Simply put, you don't know how you feel. And if you're supporting what you don't know how you feel, you're then sucked in. Because that anger and fear are the two most draining energies on the planet. Okay? So we have to look at fear. So next question to you is, I do not shrink perspectives to fit into neurotically rationalized confines of your ignorance, generated fearfully worshipped compromise of inner avoidances. So, if I ask you, what are you avoiding? What are you avoiding in your life? Could you answer that?
No. Not really. I don't avoid anything, because I don't live in fear. Because there's a clear distinction between living in fear of the unknown, just being completely afraid of every little thing around the corner. Oh, I don't know what's coming around the next corner. Oh my God. Oh, I have to worry. Everything is dangerous. Oh, the world is a horrible place. Versus actually being confronted with the thing that you don't understand, that you're afraid of. So no. I really can't answer that question.
Okay. I wouldn't expect, knowing you, that you are avoiding something. When something comes up that you do feel fear, that means there's something you don't understand, right? So something comes up you don't understand. Let's say you have a dog, and the dog is developing a tumor on the side of its neck, and you take it to the vet. You don't understand what's going on. You want to get a diagnosis, but you're not avoiding the problem. You're confronting the problem by taking it to a vet to get informed on what it is that's involved with this mass that's growing on the side of the neck of the dog. And that's not being afraid. that's just being aware that something needs to be dealt with. So you're not avoiding the problem. You're not saying, oh, it'll just go away on its own. No, no, you're being proactive. So that's what I would have expected you to say. You're not avoiding anything. Something comes up, it comes up. So here we are at another stage of where we look at our ego. So I'm going to ask you a question about that. Because when we talk about the ego, what is it? It's self-imaging compensations is tied together with the ego matrix. I've talked about this in the past also. In personality drag, right? You're wearing your self-image. You've got your own image of who you are. And when people are afraid, I'll tie that in, you illuminate how you've been trying to handle and reflexively assuage your inner discomforts and why our efforts have so far provided inadequate, your ego becomes the driving force, right? When your self-image becomes the primary source of all the things that you do, that's all about your self-image. And what that is it's a fear-based direction when everything is feeding your self-image. So if you say, well, I'm a football player, or, you know, I'm a senator, or, you know, I'm a whatever, that's just the image that you are. That's the ego. But is it coming from a place of being in fear that you are operating from this place of authority, or from a place of this is who I am, this is what I do, where the ego becomes controlling? And when you're afraid of losing, like you mentioned earlier, your position of losing it all, right? These politicians are afraid. Don't misunderstand it. They are doing everything they can to cover up, compensate, lie, hide anything that they're afraid of, so that people don't see who they really are. Because if they did and I exposed them, they wouldn't know how to handle it. They wouldn't have the tools to be able to address what it is that is going on with them, because they do not understand ultimately. They've just learned a skill of deception. That's what it all comes down to. So when you're not being controlled by them, then essentially you decide how you want to live your life. And
it was just like yesterday when we were chatting during the show, the live show, the politicians are the epitome, the pinnacle, the top of the definition of the Dunning-Kruger effect. And that's that, you know, that confirmational bias thing where you have a little bit of information, but you think you have the whole picture. You think you understand the whole thing. That's politicians. That's politics. By definition, it pretends to have all the answers and pretends to know what's going on and to be able to provide the solutions. And it can't, it doesn't. And so of course that's going to feed right into that constant fear of them losing their jobs, losing their constituency. And as it begins to get worse and worse over a collapsing society, their lives, because eventually they become targets of the people that they've been abusing for the last, oh, let's say 250 years.
So there you have why we're seeing it implode right before our very eyes. It's happening. I mean, we really don't have to take much action, if any, to watch this, you know, charade, you know, unfold. And it's collateral damage. It's sad. It's horrible. It's absolutely unnecessary. And idiots that don't, you know, get the message that it's time to change direction, they'll create the most damage that they possibly can before it brings them down. I'm so saddened by the because these things could have been avoided with just a slight adjustment. I mean, I could have done it with, you know, in literally, I could have sat with whoever these decision makers are and exposed what it is that they're in conflict with themselves. They're in contradiction. And when they don't have it, they're going to do whatever they can to support what it is that their biases, their fears are supporting. Okay. So we're clear on that. And I'm going to give you the ways of catching yourself so that you don't get sucked in by this. So the last question I have is, have you given in to fear? Now, in your case, have you ever given in to fear?
I don't think so. I don't think that I can point to any point where, when I'm confronted with something I don't understand, I try to understand it. And I think I always do. I don't know. it comes really easy to me understanding, because the things that I lack understanding in are things that I've just never thought of.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. The things that I thought of, if I've taken the time to think of them at all, I put them in their place, and they're organized and cataloged, and they're when necessary for retrieval.
Well, we evolve, at different ages. How to, look at how we individually deal with fears. Well, maybe we are going on your first date, right? You might have had some insecurities about how you would come across, or maybe your first job interview, okay? And your heart beats, you get that scared. Oh, I wonder how I'm going to come across. Am I going to be accepted or am I going to be rejected? And by the way, I want to make that point. You never can be rejected. You can only reject yourself. Okay. Somebody who you put that into perspective when you go to an appointment. For example, I like to put this as one where I arrived at my appointment and I got dissed. What is that? Disappointment. If you're disappointed, that something didn't work out, a project didn't come to fruition, you didn't get that job you wanted, you didn't make the kind of money you wanted on selling your car, whatever it is. If you're looking at satisfaction, which is really what we're arriving at here, we have to address the issues of what we have been afraid of, inadequacies, okay? So I'm going to go into when we what do I do in honoring my own development, my own steps in life where I'm evolving. I'm growing. I'm interested. I'm curious. I'm aware of a situation, but I'm not necessarily having all the answers, perhaps, on something. So what do I do? It's, to me, Michael, when you are excruciatingly honest like that, it's a return to grace. You're not excluding the world as it being the problem. It's putting you in a position of saying, what am I capable of? How at this age, at my development, what am I truly needing? And then you get to change the direction of energy. You don't allow fear to become that which controls you. It becomes an awareness where you say, if I don't understand, I don't understand, and I'm not going to beat myself up for not understanding. Because when you insist you understand and you really don't, that's when you become afraid. That's when you can be controlled. And our society, as has a a proclivity for being drawn into fear-based systems, if you will. And that means that if we're replacing it with something that isn't fear-based, it has to come from a place of being absolutely honest about what we are not addressing. Are we really needing all these pesticides on our plants and on food? Are we really needing to burn up so much energy? Are we really needing AI data centers? I mean, what are all these things that are going on in our world? Why has it taken such a drastic drop in our evolution? Is because these fears had never been resolved. We've never come to a place where we as a culture are agreeing that we move in a direction that's not an internal battle. And that internal battle is reflected outwardly, so it's got to be blaming others. It's got to be blaming this country or that country or this group or that group. Instead, what the new model is that we are not pointing the finger outwardly. We are internally addressing our inadequacies and being able to build the culture around what it is that the true needs are. Because the needs are not war. I can tell you that. That's not a need. That's an outwardly bigger cudgel approach. We're going to, you know, beat you into submission. And that always fails. As you know, historically, it's like the analogy that the hard will always give way to the soft, which is to say that water moves around the rocks, right? It'll always give, and the hard will always give way to the soft. And that means that when you've beaten everybody up, you've killed people, you've destroyed buildings, you've done with all of this, have you further advanced your abilities? Have you further advanced the your ability to make sense of what you are trying to achieve? There's times and places where you have to defend yourself. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is resolving the inner fear. So if something comes at you and accuses you of something that's not making sense, you catch it. You stop it. You say, wait a minute, I'm not going to buy into this. There's something I don't understand. And you said yourself yesterday that you don't understand the psychology of greed. It doesn't make sense to you. Well, it doesn't make sense to me either. But to those that are rationalizing their efforts to gain more of who they imagine who they are, their ego, their self-image, then gathering is who they are. Gaining is who they are. Gaining more of what that is. So when power is properly placed, it's placed in a way where it's become adequate, appropriate, and effective into achieving what you really want. I want understanding. You want understanding. You don't want to feed what it is that's already taking so much and making so much destruction, you stop that process because you see how it's being, encouraged, promoted, offered, buy into the fear. But what we have now is the opportunity over thousands of generations to finally break this cycle. And I have the unmitigating gall to say that I've achieved that level. And to do so, I want to be challenged, because what is going to happen is we'll see all this collateral damage that's going to be happening. And we need to, at the end of this cycle, rebuild. And we're going to be rebuilding it with the new understanding of the upgrade that I'm talking about. How does all that sound to you? Look, I see you nodding your head and you're going, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't find any problem with it. I think it is true. I look at it and wonder how long it all ends up taking and the toll that it's going to have on everyone else that isn't prepared, which is most people. And I just mean mentally prepared. I'm not talking about making sure you have stacks of ammo and MREs in the basement and stuff like that. Just mentally prepared to deal with change. Most people aren't. Most people are afraid of change. They're, you know, exactly what we're talking about here. They just live in fear of having to do something different out of the ordinary. Particularly and rightfully so, if it's forced on them from some external source. And so you can't blame them, but it is a fact. It just is their headspace. And so they're not prepared. They're not ready for a change. And so it doesn't even matter if it's a good change. It's just change, and they're just afraid of it. And so we're going to keep having these conversations and keep just spelling it out for everybody that it's very clear that the way things are going, the way that we've been doing things across the medical system, across the political system, across the social system, what have you, isn't working. It hasn't worked. It's never worked. It's been, as you say, it's based on fear. It's built on fear. I don't know how more we could describe that and prove that reality, given what we just were talking about in terms of why the politicians would be afraid, why the politicians would deal in fear. It's just a fact, and we just have to inform more people of that fact and let them know that it doesn't even really matter it doesn't really matter what they move on to next, as long as they get it. You know, everybody asks the anarchists, well, what do you do in the absence of the state? Well, I don't necessarily know what you do in the absence of the state. What you do, I do the same thing I've been doing every single day of my life, getting along with other people, making my life work. What part of we are they concerned about? They're certainly not concerned about my ability to pick up the slack on my end and do what I need to do. They're certainly not concerned about that. So they must be concerned about their own ability to do it, and their own ability, their own awareness, and their own wherewithal. You know, that complete, it's a word you've used a couple of times here recently. I use it all the time because it encompasses the entire notion of the ability, the understanding, the want, all of these things all in one word. And most people lack, we'll just say one of the three, if not all three of the three.
Yeah. And that's what we're dealing with, fearlessness, to be aware of your own development such that you don't allow whatever you have in the past allowed yourself to be taken in by or sucked in by or taken advantage of. If we make mistakes, we pay for them. Okay. And that's why most of the time. So what I would suggest is that when we're moving into this new place of understanding how we've been lied to, how we've been fooled, it's easy to be negatively charged at those that had done this, right? Those that had created the environment that we are, suffering from, right? And that's power, Half of this world is consciousness, being aware, and the other half is power. So They're using all their power in ways of being destructive, and ways of taking people's energy. They're thieves. They're parasites. They're and we're talking about politicians and the political system mostly, but in the medical field too. They're guilty of this in such a manner that I had to take a stand and say I will not feed a system that rewards me for being in a lie. I won't do it. And so we'll take what we know. We have science. We have these amazing ways of testing things. But essentially, we are dealing with a populace that is getting less and less healthy over the decades, and more diseases, more and more confusion about what's causing them. And no one's, you know, raising his hand saying, hold it, you know, we got to change direction here, please. You know, get some intelligent people together to make that change possible. So I'm going to read what I have here for the fearlessness direction, and I'm going to give people the tools that help break this cycle, okay? So getting rid of that deep, unknown, primal sense of dread that lurks in the back of everyone's mind. The objective of this show, and when I see patients individually, their sessions, is to eliminate the subconscious inhibitory mechanism that has compelled you to sabotage your opportunities and hold back from going after what you really want. And I said that yesterday, by the way, Michael, getting what you want. What's happiness? Getting what you want. Okay. And or to do a trade-off whereby if you become capable in one aspect of your life too often, you may feel compelled to mess up a different aspect of your life, thereby keeping you from taking full advantage of those places where you are competent, so that you will become adequate and comfortable in accessing everything that is available to you and utilizing it to your heart's content. So I'm really all about satisfaction. You know, I'm about saying, hey, if this is something that's a curiosity of mine, this is something that you know, draws me in, I'm going to move towards it. And that's the first rule. If something feels good to you, if something is drawing you in, something that gives you energy, move towards it, but move cautiously, right? Cults are, you know, like the Jonestown massacre, you know, they bought into the trip that they're going to be dying and that the meter is going to come down on them. And they all took their own life because of the deepest of fears that drew them to that kind of energy, that type of cult. Now, there's cults of government. There's cults of medicine. These cults are buying their own trip. They've bought their own system because these systems are controlling. And when some system controls you, you're not in control. Your energy is going towards feeding whatever that system is. And so we have broken the cycle. And in order to, with the first rule to break the cycle for yourself, is that anytime something feels good to you, you move towards it. When it doesn't, you move away from it. And how that works in your own mechanism is that anytime you feel this fear that comes up, which is also tied to doubt, because you don't understand when you're doubting something, then you take your power back. Because if you're feeding what you don't understand, it'll drain you and your energy, and especially in Chinese medicine, the most affected organ is the kidneys and the urinary bladder. So I'm so scared I peed my pants, you know. It came up from behind me and scared me. I peed my pants. That is the organ, if you're talking physically, that's most affecting your physical body. So directly affecting your physical awareness is integrated into your physical operation. You know, bedwetting, for example, that's something that is when you're a child that you grow out of. But there's something in that's causing the bedwetting that has to be programming, right? That's part of the program, that something has scared you or scared, you know, the child to the point to where they can't control the bladder, right? That's the part of toilet training, right? We have to learn through our years of development. And overcoming those insecurities is part of why we need good, the genuine parents, the genuine and helpful, you know, society that makes it possible for the child's development to move into these spaces with confidence. And our whole culture is about distraction mostly right now. It's not about encouraging them to be critical thinkers, process and work out problems. It's how easily can we distract the culture so that they're malleable, they're controlled, and we control the trip, right? Well, that is a system that is, it's collapsing, but there's so much of this distraction that is so seductive, and be it video, addictions, computer addictions. These are good things, but they're not, if they're not properly, you know, placed in your world, they become overbearing, and you develop a kind of mind that is getting weaker as a result of you being overstimulated. And drugs are a big part of this. And I also see this as being a kind of rebellion, where there's those that are in the culture where they get extra piercings and tattoos, and they abuse their bodies because internally they're trying to make a statement, but they don't express themselves with, you know, the awareness that abusing your body isn't necessarily a good message. It's just what they have been told or been exposed to that gives them some kind of ability to make a statement, right? So when I make that, it's not a criticism. It's an awareness, right? I'm not beating up people who have tattoos and piercings. What I'm saying is that this blocks energy. In Chinese medicine, if you have a piercing on your navel, you're 7 times more likely to get headaches. If you have a piercing on your tongue, you're 8 times more likely to get back pain, because these are qi or energy that's being blocked. Okay, there's a direct connection to your body's having some obstacle or some block of energy that relates directly to how you physically are built and how you heal. So, I encourage people to ask me questions about this, because we can overcome these problems. It's just that we do not usually have the authorities giving us proper direction. And that's where you, Michael, have been, I would say, excelling in being aware of where those shortcomings are and how to be aware of where you're being diverted from the path of being self-empowered. Okay, so I went on a bit of a lecture there, I know, but but I'd like to get your feedback on that and how you feel about what I've already said.
Well, you mentioned the phrase critical thinking, and that's something that a lot of people don't do. It's not something that just happens. It's not a thing that just automatically happens. You have to hone the skill, and the problem with critical thinking is it can become critical over analysis if you go too far with it. And so there's a comfortable spot where you're critical of the things that are being presented to you that you don't know, don't understand, can't control, what have you, versus sort of being critical of anything that's even real and physical. That's why we are where we are with people who think that the planet is flat for some reason. You know, their critical thinking skills have failed them. They've gone beyond critical thinking to just being critical of anything that's presented that they don't know, don't understand, can't wrap their minds around, which is most things, especially when you're talking about something like the planet and how insignificant we as individuals are on the planet, our relative size to the planet is a really important thing to understand for people, to keep them from going from being critical of things that are presented to them, to just being cynical about reality and just believing that nothing is true and nothing is real.
Right. Well, therein lies the forgiveness. I want to bring that up because this is about fear and forgiveness. And
well, you probably should, because you got about 8 minutes to get it in there.
We have a very unique ability as humans to be able to forgive. And it's my position that if, say, for example, you did get a tattoo and it was part of your life, you don't necessarily... I've seen people, because I treat people all the time, and I look at tattoo removals, okay? And there's still like a hue of it, of the tattoo that's still there. But people go through these crises in life. There you go. And then there's always going to be that allowing yourself to make your expression who you are with what you are. And you can get a tattoo and be perfectly good with it. It's not that it's not there to show that you can't express yourself. That's the opposite of what I'm talking about. It's just you express yourself in your own unique way. And how you do it means that if you've ever beat yourself up, you've ever been hard on yourself, and you've ever been done something that you regretted, which we all have, I will point out that you have the ability to forgive. And I said yesterday that if someone comes to me and they ask for forgiveness, I say to them, I can forgive you, but can you forgive yourself? And I always have to weigh out what it is that I'm forgiving. Am I forgiving them because they are truly sorry? Are they sincere? Or are they just giving you a facade? They're giving you a false premise, an illusion that they really want forgiveness. And then it's time to, you know, put your guard up and say, there's something not right about this. There's something that I have to be discerning. And what I have noticed is that when forgiveness moves into the picture, healing happens tenfold. I mean, it's huge how much the changes that happen in people when they forgive themselves and all the things that they have done that they regretted, or that they didn't want to yell at their mother for something, or they had something where they were stealing. They were convinced that they had to steal from somebody. These things can be changed because we have that unique ability to forgive. And when you're in fear, when you live in fear, it's got you by the short hairs. Okay. And so I encourage those that are in that place right now, psychologically, that have places that they want to forgive themselves, is that they approach their fears cautiously, that you don't jump into it and try to overcompensate by buying into this trip or that trip. It's move into it and be, you know, gracious to yourself by saying, here's what I was doing, why I did it, and I'm honest about why I made that move, and what I did I regretted. Or you say, whatever happened to me, I was a victim of something, right? My father told me, you know,
you went mute. You're on mute. It just happened real quick. I just saw it pop up and it's still there for some reason. I don't know why. I didn't even see you move or anything. It just flipped over to mute and it's not on my end. So I'm not exactly sure what it is.
All right. We got it back.
There you go.
Thank you. My father said, I had all this anger inside of me as a young kid, and I'd burn it off by running around. And I thought to myself, why was I an angry kid? What was causing me? And I did some regression on myself. I found out that when I was, and this might shock people, but I was circumcised and I was defenseless. I psychologically, I felt that I wasn't able to be protected. And that in itself, a lot of men were circumcised. And that I found was a source of anger inside me, that I wouldn't be protected when I needed to be because I was defenseless. And interesting psychological change that takes place when that happens to a man is that he doesn't, he has to be aggressive, that he has to somehow fight the world because the world is against him. Okay. And I'm sharing that because I want to change the direction of humanity. I don't want circumcision in anybody, but it happened to me. And that was one of the sources that I had to overcome. And when I realized that that was it, I had to forgive, first of all, myself in realizing that I was so angry at the world and I was going through something that I didn't understand at the time. But I also wanted to forgive my parents for doing that because they put me in a position where I was unprotected and I was dependent on them. So when that happened, the whole world changed for me. And for fear of not being in control and that I had to take it out on others, that changed entirely for me. And it became where I took on the role of being the healer, because I knew what I had to overcome to be able to offer to others. Because the next best thing to having it for yourself is what? Giving it to others.
Sharing that. Yeah, absolutely.
How can you, and I know we have a few minutes left, but can you relate to being able to forgive yourself on things that have happened in the past that have opened up the space for you to heal?
Yeah, it happens. There's little things here and there, and you sort of bump up against people or ideas over time that it causes conflict with other people, and you regret it. You want to go back. You want to fix it. And the best thing to do is to do that. Unfortunately, if somebody dies or, you know, moves on and you can't, then you're kind of stuck with that. And you have to find your own way about how to alleviate yourself of that pain and guilt and shame or whatever it happens to be. It's one of the tough ones for a lot of people who struggle with their parents and struggle with a childhood that wasn't great for them, and not going back as far as you went back necessarily, but that's a core pain. I don't know. It's not one I have, luckily.
Well, there's these taboo topics.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're not supposed to talk about some of these things like that because it's there's so many reasons. We might have to have that longer conversation about that one of these days anyway, because there's a lot of interesting things about that. There's a lot of weird things that we do as people. That we don't need to do, and that's one of them. Unfortunately, we're out of time this time, though, Dr. Lloyd. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend. Everyone else, if you got something out of this, if you enjoyed it, if you were entertained, if you think somebody you know would get something out of this, share it with just one person.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network.